This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick, Becca, and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Howdy.
We have a great show for you this week. We're looking at the undead in 13th Age, just as monsters, as thematic, why we enjoy them, and then kind of how we would use them as the primary antagonist in a campaign. So, Nick, when you hear undead, how would you describe them? What are they? I mean, I'm assuming most of our listeners are diehard F20 fans, but if you're coming to this podcast with no knowledge whatsoever of the undead, what are undead?
To put it as simply as I can, there are things that are alive, and then they're not, and then they are again. And that's creepy as hell. So they make great monsters, and really your imagination is left to what could you bring back, whether you're talking about cute little fuzzy squirrels or whether you're talking about the big bad boss that you just took out. Well, now it's back, and because it's been in the underworld, it's now even worse than it was when it was just alive.
They are dead, yet they are still part of this world in some shape or form. And this goes from like corporeal undead, which are very, you know, skeletons, zombies, that sort of thing, or very ethereal undead, ghosts and banshees. I think the first time I came across it, and I don't know if he coined the term or it's just the oldest reference that I have seen with the actual term undead, was Dracula. Like in Bram Stoker's Dracula, you know, there's this great point where I think it's Van Helsing describes Dracula not as the dead, but as the undead. And it's just this very evocative term for what's going on in the story. There are a lot of undead in 13th Age. There are a lot of undead in F20 games. One of my favorite books on the matter is the 4th edition, Something of the Grave. But it was just a book on undead in D&D and what they are and how to use them, why they are so interesting. And so let's kind of talk about that. Why are the undead interesting? For me, they're very horrific. Anytime you have something that is human but isn't, right, that's why they're scary. We all understand what death is, but to have something that is dead and yet moving, that instills kind of a visceral terror in us.
In that, it's not only are they dead and unmoving, but there's that possibility of, I knew them when they were alive, now they are dead and trying to kill me.
Mm-hmm. And not all undead, but some of them add the additional horrific quality of, because they're not living or dead, they have this need to sort of consume what is alive to extend their existence, whether it's flesh for zombies or blood for vampires. There's this idea of, in order to continue in their horrific existence, they have to consume what they once were, sort of in a very bizarre parody of, you know, many religious rites like communion or sacrifices, where you kill something in order to commune with the deity or commune with the community. This thing is sort of, you know, the undead, especially zombies, they really do sort of exhibit the worst traits of kind of our consumer culture in, you know, the modern Western world, just mindless, ravenous communal feeding. And that's sort of horrific to see kind of coming at you, whether they are slow zombies of George Romero or the fast zombies of World War Z. There's just this, the horde is coming for you and all it wants to do is consume you into itself.
The mindless ones are scary on a certain level and creep. It's the intelligent vampires and liches that, as a GM, you should really try to make horrific, because they're planning for so long. I mean, how do you defeat a lich that's been alive for 1,000 years? That's the horror.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I use Strahd, as Mark has brought up, for one of the ultimate vampire lords from F20 games. And he managed to convince at least one person in the group that he really wasn't that bad of a guy. And so when they went into this final battle, at least one character was like, well, I don't really need to fight him, so I'm going to go over here. And another character is sitting there going, maybe we can just talk to him, guys. We'll be fine. The battle went pretty far south because someone who has that much knowledge of human existence is able to find your weaknesses and exploit them in a very malicious way.
Although I will say in that fight, I did not find Strahd as scary as my character was wearing his clothes and Strahd was magnificently naked. But that is neither here nor there. Yeah, so let's, when you think of undead, we've mentioned a lot of them. What monsters come to mind when I say, hey, we're going to fight undead? What comes to the fore of your mind?
Well, one of the things that comes pretty quickly, and maybe it's just because of the culture we're in and some of the fascination that has been taking place the last couple of years is with zombies. You know, these things that maybe the thing with zombies are they're most of the time they're not necessarily being brought back by somebody, but it's that the thing that killed them is also what's bringing them back. And then there is just that mindless feeding. I think, you know, you were talking about the intelligent undead being horrific. And I think that was one of the most terrifying parts of the movie I Am Legend, where these zombies weren't just mindlessly wandering around trying to eat all of the living, is that there was a leader among them and it was intelligent. And he finally, you know, noticed the person who was trying to stay under the radar. And then there was just this persistent, I'm going to throw anybody and everybody because they're all dispensable and just going to take you out. But zombies certainly come to mind when I think about undeads, and then also just living skeletons and that sort of thing, ghosts, shades, whatnot.
So the scariest part of the I Am Legend movie to me was how badly they butchered the story from the book. But
I haven't read the book, so it doesn't surprise me, though.
The book is really good. I would highly recommend reading I Am Legend. Becca, what about you? What comes to mind?
When I think about the fact that my character is going into a abandoned temple castle and I'm told there are undead, the first thing I think of is I need a cleric. And the second thing is the skeletons, the flaming skulls, the bones that are probably lurking here and can rise up at any time through the floor to snatch us.
Mark mentioned Strahd as kind of one of these things that you think about when you think about D&D and undead. What are some other ones?
Well, Strahd for Ravenloft, which was in first edition, was just a fantastic campaign. As a GM, it sucked as a player, but that was just a well put together. So that sticks in my mind for that. And then for me also, Wights. As a kid, the first time I read Tolkien and the Barrow White and the Hobbits, that scene scared the bejeebies out of me as a kid. That was like, because I'd heard about Frankenstein and vampires, but those were kind of movies and it wasn't that scary, really.
Yeah.
That scene in the Barrow was terrifying as a kid to read Tolkien.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the creepy hand grabbing the sword. It's just well written, but that whole concept of something living undead, in there.
Mm-hmm. And I think you could, you know, I put down wraiths, right? You have the ring wraiths in Tolkien. It's a word he sort of created, right? And it has sort of this combination of like wrath and like twisting. And wraiths kind of really pop into my mind as kind of a quintessential undead. But also liches and mummies. And for me, I remember the first time we fought a mummy and mummy rot was a thing, right? That like they're so steeped with sort of the disease of death that even fighting them can pass on to those who slay them. Oh, still makes my skin crawl thinking about it. But I think liches are sort of that, for me, that perfect undead villain to use in a D&D game for all the reasons that we mentioned, right? They're powerful. They've got a ton of magic and they have been planning longer than your family has existed. Going into a lich's lair, especially because if you haven't found their phylactery, they're just going to come back, and they're going to come back pissed because you ruined whatever they had been planning for several hundred years. In that case, it is a case of Moby Dick, right? Except you are the whale, and this ancient evil is Ahab, who is just completely consumed with you. He may have been slipping into ennui, but thanks to you, now I have a new purpose. You have revitalized me, and I have something to focus all of my attention on. So 13th Age has a lot of interesting takes on these monsters, and especially like mechanically how to bring about their iconic abilities and powers to the fore. So let's talk about adventurer tier monsters. What are some of your favorite adventurer tier undead? Mark, let's start with you because you have a great reference.
I picked Skeleton. Just because, as a kid watching Jason and the Argonauts with Ray Harryhausen's pre-CGI special effects with skeletons rising out of the earth, Hydra, just that whole movie was great. So the idea of bringing these skeletons, and it's the unrelenting foe. For 13th Age, I like the 16 plus on your roll to reflect the damage resistance that older F20 games had, depending on the type of weapon you had, that they weren't as effective fighting skeletons. Mm, you know, your spears and arrows kind of just went through the ribs. I think those are perfect. Low level, rising up. You know, nothing like having grandpa's bones come out of the graveyard, walk into the tavern.
Yeah, there's sort of that iconic scene where as Becca said, right, the skeletal hands burst from the ground. To really let your players know that they're in trouble. Nick, let's go with you. What are some of the low level monsters that you really enjoy?
I like the variety of the skulls depicted in Bestiary 1, whether it be the Screaming Skull or the Flaming Skull or the Slime Skull. I see those as being things that people might buy to guard something, and would be a nice entry point as the adventurers are just kind of starting out. They're going to walk into this temple. All of a sudden, now they see a wall of skulls, and one of them starts screaming obscenities at them, or just starts screeching, and they're all taking the psychic damage. The slime skull especially stood out to me is because the weirdness factor is really high. How this slime kind of died, and the skull kind of died, and they ended up killing each other and together morphed into this new monster. The jest bones in that section also stood out to me just because I'm a fan of puns, and as a GM gaining damage bonuses from bad puns. I don't know, that's fun. And then it's also, it would be an easy way to start easing some of that tension in the scene with the players. If it started getting a little bit too much, you know, you start throwing bad puns at them and everyone at the table starting to laugh a little bit and kind of break that tension a little bit. And then I've mentioned in the past, one of the past episodes, coin zombies, which I don't know. I like that as an idea of a recurring monster that keeps coming and to the point where the players are just suspicious every time they see a pile of coins, whether that be in somebody's basement or in a treasure room or whatever, just, you know, having that hesitation of maybe we don't want to be greedy as they start moving toward the coins and getting infected with the coin curse.
For me, ghouls, I really like ghouls, and 13th Age has them as undead, and I'm totally fine with that. I think for me, ghouls kind of, I first came across them in Shadowrun and in Cthulhu, where they're not dead, they're just different. They're sort of a different thing, but their ghouls were always sort of linked with this eating the flesh of the dead. And I really like the ghouls in Bestiary 1, especially the Licklash, a flesh seeking tongue that depending on whether it's a critical hit or a natural even or a natural odd hit, it does something different. And then still it has sort of that zombie take on it because, right, if you die by a ghoul, you come back as a ghoul. And so even in 13th Age, which very rarely has those kind of on-death effects, we still find kind of the classic ghoul bite will turn you into one of them. And I like that. And the ghoul pus buster, mainly because I like saying pus buster. And the fact that its special ability is called Vomit Comet. I totally forgot about that. Becca, what about you?
I was flipping through both the bestiary books, and the battle shade has caught my attention. And by the time this comes out, it doesn't matter to my players anymore, because I think I'm going to be using these things. And just that idea of, as you're walking across the plains, an old battlefield, you awaken those that fought and died. And so, yeah, you have the swordsman shades, you have the archer shades, you have these things that are coming up and out of the battlefield. And as the PCs move through the battlefield, they don't know if they are going to awaken more or if they should just run. And in the bestiary, it also has some terrain effects. Half-formed hands of mud and dirt reaching out of the ground to grapple your legs and feet. It makes just it hard to move, or makes your PCs get stuck. And so there's just fun little nuggets to use as a GM in order to just kind of hamper your players and make them wary of just rushing in and running around.
So kind of, and we were putting this episode together, we had, I went through and looked at undead, and by my count, there are 82 different undead creatures sort of between the core book, 13 True Ways, and both bestiaries. So there is a plethora of unique monsters across the tiers. Becca, let's start with you. What about for champion tier?
What did I pick for champion? The skulls. And so Nick had brought up some of the lower skulls, the slime skull and the just bones. A classic is always the flaming skull that has been seen through multiple versions of F20 games. And then the skull of the beast, and just the idea that it's no longer just humanoids who are coming back to haunt you, but maybe your cow?
Moo!
For example, the skull of the beast, the flavor text says, a cow skull floats above a headless ogre body. It'd be stupid if it wasn't trying to kill you.
I really feel like, for me at least, that connects with sort of the, again, the Diablo 2 kind of mindset. No, that's a good one. Like, there's just a ton of really great, just in that whole category. Mark, what about you?
I liked the Wraith from the core book.
Mm-hmm.
Fifth level spoiler. I liked that it gets to use the escalation die for its spiraling assault when it's even. So I, as a GM, sometimes we like monsters who use the escalation die. We can go, ha-ha, you're not the only one, players. And it's a nice iconic, you know, Wraiths, we've talked about it.
Oh, yeah. All right, Nick, what about you?
As I was digging through the bestiaries, I came across the Wendigos, and I liked that the weirdness that was there. I thought it was a great monster type to introduce as part of the champion tier arc. It has very ambiguous origins, and even in real life mythology, there's just a lot of certainty about what are these. Are these spirits? Are these undead? I thought there'd be an interesting thing to bring in as a hook for the characters to use. But the monsters themselves are absolutely fascinating. I love the, especially like the Wendigo spirit, the soul bite attack ends up causing a transference of that hunger that the spirit has, that the undead has. And if you're affected by it until you succeed at a save, then you end up having to roll on a table to see what you're able to do, whether you're going to, you know, start gnawing on yourself to try to satisfy that hunger, or if you're going to attack one of your allies, or if you're going to be able to continue to fight the spirit. But the whole Wendigo section I thought was very evocative and inspiring for a lot of ways that you can take an arc with that for the champion tier.
I felt the same way about the ghosts in Bestiary too. There is a great group of four, fifth, sixth, and seventh level ghosts right there in, as I said, in Bestiary 2. The Petulant never was. Just the fact that it's a ghost who's hanging around because it was such an abject failure in life that it has the need to stick around. The Major Haunting, the Disgraced Legionnaire, and some of these are double strength. This would be perfect for like a haunted location that is that it's not just about defeating the ghosts, but what is it about this place that is causing them to congregate? So I'll start off with Epic. It's the Lich. I mean, we knew it was going to be the Lich for me. Like, the Lich is spectacular. The Lich count, these are all in Bestiary 1. I have yet to be able to throw one of these monsters at at my players, and it has to happen soon. I think that most of the epic tier ones are double strength, as they should be, and they feel like a undead wizard who's been hanging around for centuries. But my favorite, it's not just so much the attacks, it's the my favorite things about them are their special abilities. So like the Lich Count has an ability called Thank You for the 10 Best Years of Your Life. When a Lich scores a critical hit, the target loses a death save until the end of battle. In addition, the crit range against that target expand by the escalation die, and the Lich heals. They just take away the 10 best years of your life. Or Heartstopper, the Lich Prince, when it scores a critical hit, if the target still has hit points, it drops to zero HP, falls unconscious, and begins making death saves. That's terrifying. It's the power word kill of monsters, right? Mark, what about you? What kind of stood out at the upper levels?
Well, I had the Lich Prince for all the reasons that you stated. And we mentioned earlier, you know, how would you use these? The Lich Prince and the Vampire are perfect arch nemesis, that this is the entity behind the whole campaign, that you finally at epic level confront either the Lich Prince for yours or the Vampire. And again, I would use, and I'd say that's almost not even as an option, you have to use the Nastier special with the Vampire of Compulsion, because it's the epic fight. I mean, these are iconic, mm-hmm. all puns intended, bad guys that it should be a very tough fight, that if some of your party survives, it's a win.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, just personally at epic level, there should be no fair fights.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just,
especially with a Lich, like, or a Vampire. There's not going to be a fair fight.
Especially because they both have the same kind of fail-safes of, if you don't kill them, the Lich is going to Phylactery and the Vampire is going to his coffin. And if you don't know where it's at, he's coming back for you again. Or I'm just going to wait 50 years and come after your grandchildren. That's what's really scary, is I'm just going to wait. You'll die anyway.
Yeah, I'll come back to you when you are old and decrepit and the flower of life has left you. And then maybe I'll even offer you a place at my side when you're at your absolute weakest.
Yeah. Be my skeleton butler.
Becca, what stood out for you?
In the Bestiary 2, they have a whole section on the Great Ghoul, and how it was a icon from a previous age, half remembered, and it therefore has servants and warriors and fighters for it. And so it really starts at champion level with some of the humanoids who follow the Great Ghoul. And then as it gets into epic tier, you end up fighting the Great Ghoul's maw. And so a giant gaping mouth. Okay. Yes.
His maw, not his maw.
Yeah. Not his mumsy.
His meemaw.
That's right.
Not his meemaw. But yeah, a gaping void in the earth, or a giant cave that turns out to actually be a mouth. And if you manage to defeat that, it has the Bestiary has recommendations for how do you actually eliminate the Great Ghoul. And it might take multiple victories against that maw and then defeating the Great Ghoul's shadow. So it kind of brings the ghouls from the lower levels into a more terrifying, oh, these are ancient beings. They're not just what we took care of at level 4. They actually come from something deeper, darker, and more horrific.
Nick, you want to round us out here?
Yeah. So as I was going through Bestiary 2, the Reavers really stood out to me as an epic tier threat that I would want to lean into. They're kind of depicted as the harvesters for the Lich King, going around and, maybe when his forces are starting to get thinned a little bit by the heroic actions of those rabble rousers, you know, he sends his Reavers out to just kind of gather up a new army for him. The Gruesome Weaver especially stood out as one that I would probably want to bring into the epic tier. I certainly wouldn't want to put him in as the like the main big bad guy, but certainly using him as a second in command, I think could go a long ways. I like the phasing aspect that this monster has and its interaction with the escalation die. When one of the PCs rolls a death save or ends up dying, he's able to call on additional death shades to kind of join the fight and make it that much harder. Again, kind of playing on this thematic idea that he's harvesting undead and bringing or increasing the Lich King's army. And then also he's pretty resilient against attacks, a little bit less so against those that deal holy damage, but then there's a significant backlash if holy damage is dealt against it. It really only has one attack, so it would be kind of straightforward just to run it. But there's a lot of other stuff going on with this monster that would take a lot of attention and maybe a little bit of figuring out by the players how to best take him out.
All right. So as we said, there are a lot. I mean, we just covered really a drop in the undead bucket. If you were to come up with a campaign where you wanted the entire focus of the campaign to really be focused on the undead, let's sort of start with where we would start kind of as GMs. What icons would you see being at the fore? If we were to pick four different icons and just tell our players, hey, coming into this campaign, undead is going to be a big, big theme. What icons would we direct our players to if we kind of wanted to narrow the field?
I mean, Lich King is the obvious first one.
The gimme, yeah.
And probably encouraging an antagonistic view towards the Lich King because you're going to be killing the undead things.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really want a complicated relationship with him because it will be a straightforward, you want to kill the undead.
Yeah. And I think counterbalancing that, I would go with, depending on, I would probably narrow the focus, at least in the adventurer tier, to a specific region on the Dragon Empire and focus in on one of the three monarchs. So would it be, would the Lich King be being opposed by the Elf Queen, the Dwarf King, or the Emperor? Sort of as a, hey, this whatever's going on is starting here in the heart of their power. So what, I really want, or even give all three if we're going to do like a seven icon campaign. Nick, who would you bring in?
So the four that kind of came to mind would be the Lich King, which would be immediately opposed to the priestess. And then I would also bring in the High Druid and the Emperor. And I see those four as maybe being, there's enough, I think, ambiguous tension between all four of those. Some of them more diametrically opposed than the others, but enough of a blending between those four. It would be really interesting to see what sort of campaign would take place with that.
Yeah. So we got our icons. We kind of explained this to our characters. I could definitely see PCs bringing in almost anything, but I would be shocked if we did not see at least one cleric and one necromancer. Those are kind of the two that make the most sense to me. Are there any other, just quickly, like classes that you would see as being really part of a group that is fighting the undead?
I would say a commander, someone to help encourage. Because if you use anything with undead that has like a terror or a afraid or fear, having a commander or a paladin
mm-hmm.
to help combat the fear effects, I think would be important.
Yeah.
I can see a ranger thematically being a good fit for that type of campaign. The archetype of one who kind of goes out into the wilderness to fight the forces of chaos and evil, and then successful returns back to civilization.
So in an undead campaign, obviously, we're going to have some sort of, and we covered the different ones that we would personally use as kind of the big bad. But to me, kind of the establishing shot of the campaign is your adventurer level arc, right? If you're going for horror, that sort of is the point to really impress upon the PCs how terrifying undead are. Because really, once you step into that champion tier, that ability to mechanically, if you will, scare the players sort of goes away. Like you, they're champions. They're too large. They're larger than life, is I guess what I'm trying to say. So how would you see sort of starting off this adventurer tier? What would you guys use as your establishing shot for a undead themed campaign?
Cemeteries going abandoned. You're starting to have rumors around the area that they're starting out in that all of the tombs are vacant, or someone goes to bury a loved one and the next, you know, when they go to actually do the ceremony and kind of one last viewing, they open up the casket and there's nothing in there. Mm-hmm. Or even worse, something has broken out and it's starting to ramp that up, where maybe it starts out isolated and localized, and then you start hearing of this sort of thing happening more and more, and start kind of spreading along that way. I probably would, as far as the tension level, I would keep it relatively low during the adventure tier and then really crank it up at that champion, and almost to the degree or keeping things low enough at the adventure level that they're thinking it's not that big of a deal. And it's just another threat, just like everything else is. And then have something happen as they're kind of melding into champion tier. They suddenly realize, oh, wait a second, this is a really big deal. We actually are going to have to do something about this.
It's a lot broader than they anticipated.
Yeah. Or more, potentially more earth shattering. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Age ending.
Yeah.
That's the potential for it. Yeah.
Becca?
I was thinking the first episode or session with your players, and you have them walking along the road from point A to point B. When the fog rolls in and the sun goes dim, and people in this caravan of travelers, you see them getting yanked into the fog, and then the skeleton army kind of seems to pour out.
Mm.
And that idea of you can't save everyone at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that would then ramp up that horror or terror aspect of it. Cause yeah, you're strong, but you can't save everyone. Yeah. And seeing how players react to that, and if that lights the fire underneath them to go and try to save everyone, or do they go, okay, then we're going to save ourselves.
Yeah.
The people who would disappear or get yanked into the mist would be the other villagers traveling along the road. Especially like if you have a well-used road, people often travel. You happen to be in a large group that, even though you always think there's safety in numbers,
mm-hmm.
at this time, there is no safety.
Yeah.
And so that you have to kind of band together to fight off what you can. And after so many rounds, all the skeletons drop, like whatever is left, the fog rolls away, and you see how many people are missing. And it turns out that, yeah, there might be something nearby collecting humans. And that can be the introduction to the idea of a lich beginning to enact in a plan.
Well, and you've added a descriptive element that's going to trigger reactions from the players in the future. So
anytime fog rolls in.
Exactly. Anytime that they catch a glimpse of fog or mist or something, they're going to be wondering, hey, is this what's happening again?
Yeah. What about you, Mark?
Well, I would take these introductions, which I like a lot about that fog. They probably think, well, it's just introduction, first adventure. They go, they defeat the local evil, and they think everything is fine. And then however many sessions that takes, when they think they're moving on to the next phase of their adventure, you have one of the PCs visited by the ghost of their long dead mother, who pleads with them to save us, to awaken them that this is a bigger problem in the world, in the kingdom itself. So kind of project out instead of just, because a lot of times it's, you do the adventure, you defeat the bad guy, okay, we move on to the next, and there's, you have to have that why, you know, introduce that it's a bigger problem in the kingdom, you know, itself.
Yeah. I had this idea that what if, you know, who knows how campaigns tend to go once the initial PCs hit the road. But what if there is no more afterlife? Something happens. And so now things that have died, they don't stay dead. They have nowhere to go. And so in adventure tier, it gets worse and worse the further you go through adventurer tier, because now more and more people have just died through the accumulation of what's going on in the world. And now there's this sort of tipping point. What happens when the dead outnumber the living? And
That was a movie in the 70s. I can't remember. I watched it. It was a midnight movie where basically hell filled up and the dead. Yeah. People die and then they just get up and start walking around as zombies because there's nowhere to go.
Right. And then you have this fact that if someone's behind it, what is their purpose? And that's one of the nice things about undead, right? Yeah, we have 80 plus monsters in the books, but really pick one of those special abilities and apply it to any other monster in the game, because now it's an undead version of it. And then I think what I would do is to kind of play this up at the end of champion tier, I would throw a ridiculously unfair fight at the players. And anyone who died, I would have like, here's a ghost talent. Here's a skeletal talent. Here's a banshee talent, and say, if you've died, you don't stay dead. You're still a part of this, but now you're on the other side of the equation. And now the dead and the living have to stop this threat. And so Nick's monk, he kind of looks through his options, and now he's a ghoul monk, and Becca has come back as a ghost and has this special ability, and Mark is a vampire. And then the epic tier is sort of this figuring out what's really going on and how do we stop it and sort of reopen the gates of the afterlife. And then what do you do at the end if you're one of these undead heroes? How do you end this age because of what's going on?
A thought that's kind of been percolating a little bit while we've been talking is running something with the reveal, kind of like Sixth Sense, where everyone starts out as their player characters, but then somewhere along the way, they've discovered that they've been dead this whole time. That'd be an interesting, I don't know exactly how that would play out. And I wouldn't want to muck with the player's expectations too much, but for them to be going on completing all these quests and realizing that, hey, the reason why nobody likes us and the reason why everyone's scaring us and always everybody's trying to kill us is because we are the undead, you know. Be interesting.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I could see that going into the underworld too and finding out maybe at the end that it's a very simple fix. Some highfalutin adventurers killed Charon and there's no boatman anymore. And then one of you has to volunteer to become the new boatman.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Well, that was our show on the undead. Any final thoughts on these monsters?
Use them.
I don't think you're going to get any complaints from players to go kill the undead. I think they're a very killable monster until they come back. And then you can kill them again.
That's right. All right. Well, until next time, thanks for listening. And we will be back in 2 weeks.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.